from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
An attorney general gets called out for supporting the First Amendment. Twitter allows a public figure to be threatened along with their children. And a university's academic study is pulled because it might offend certain people. That's all coming up on the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. Recently, we've been talking a lot about the Johnson Amendment, which limits the free speech of pastors in the pulpit. And that topic came up at a pastor's conference, and now one man in particular is taking a lot of heat for it. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins with more.
During a recent pastor's briefing in, I believe, in St. Louis, actually it was an FRC, a Family Research Council Watchman on the Wall event, where we gather pastors at these regional briefings around the country. And in a response to a question from someone who was there, the Missouri Attorney General, Josh Hawley, expressed his support for the repealing of a provision in the federal tax code known as the Johnson Amendment. Now, this is, you know, the president campaigned on this, okay? There has been a campaign, which I served as the honorary chair for the last several years, called Pulpit Freedom Sunday, where pastors across the nation are preaching messages regarding political issues that the IRS may deem political, challenging them to take away their tax exemption. Well, Josh was asked about this, and this is what he had to say. Listen.
We used to have a challenge to the IRS. We'd issue every year. We say, listen, why don't you go ahead and fine a pastor for preaching his convictions from the pulpit? Why don't you go ahead and do it? Just try it, and we'll take the case. Now, they never take us up on it. You know, the IRS blusters, and they threaten, and they say that they would never actually do it because it's unconstitutional. It is just absolutely unconstitutional to try and tell pastors or ministers of the gospel of whatever kind what they can or cannot say from the pulpit.
Now, that was a record. We don't record these events. Someone recorded it, released it to the press. The press in the left is acting like they caught him whispering secret plans behind closed doors to these pastors. Well, was this such a controversial statement, or is this really mainstream? Joining me now is the Attorney General himself, Josh Hawley. Josh, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me.
So they caught you defending the Constitution.
That's right. They sure did. They sure did, and I will, in every place, in every forum, I've given the opportunity, Tony. I mean, the Johnson Amendment is an attempt to silence pastors and silence churches from preaching and living their convictions. It is unconstitutional. I've said that for years, and I have not changed my mind. And I would challenge Senator Claire McCaskill, who is the current senior senator from the state of Missouri, I would challenge her to start standing up for churches and come out and oppose this amendment and actually stand up for the religious liberty of our people.
Well, let me just go on record right here. She's welcome to come on and tell the folks of Missouri where she stands on this. Should pastors be free to speak from the pulpit on the issues of the day and engage in our political process, or does she believe that they should be gagged, that they should not have the freedom to speak? I mean, she's welcome to come in and speak for herself on this. You have been very clear on this. This is not something that you just came up with the other day. You've been speaking this all across the state of Missouri. You've been defending the rights of pastors to speak. And how are they responding to that?
Well, you know, pastors know and churches know. I mean, believers know that our religious liberties are on the line, and they want to have their constitutional rights, the rights that the First Amendment gives to every church and every pastor, the right to speak freely, to preach their convictions freely. And Tony, you're exactly right. I mean, this has been what I have done with my career as an attorney. I've been attorney general since 2016, but before that I was a religious liberty lawyer, a constitutional lawyer. And these are the fights that I have been fighting, and I'm going to go on fighting them for the people of my state.
Now, Attorney General Hawley, while you've actually had, I think, the Missouri Baptist Convention has spoken out on your behalf, and the characterization that the media has had in essentially saying pastors shouldn't be free to speak to the issues, that they should be silenced, the media, I don't know, they literally believe that from what I read and from what they say and the way they characterize this, they really do not think that pastors should have a voice in this process.
Oh, that's exactly right. And they've made that in my state. They've made that very clear. I mean, around the country, too, I think. But, you know, we have the largest liberal, most liberal newspaper in the state just inveigh against me, say that this was what I was proposing, was violating the separation of church and state. I mean, look, the separation of church and state, I mean, that phrase, of course, doesn't appear anywhere in the United States Constitution. But what the First Amendment does say, there is a separation, you bet. And the separation is government cannot right. tell churches how to run their church, and they cannot tell them what to preach. So if anything, the Johnson Amendment violates the true constitutional rights and separation that the First Amendment gives to our churches and our pastors.
Yeah, I agree 100%. If there is this, you know, this metaphorical separation of church and state that they talk about, that it has been crossed. That line has been breached. But it wasn't the church. It was the state that is meddling right. in the business of the church. And, you know, the president, as a candidate, this is one of the first issues he latched on to was the Johnson Amendment. It goes back to 1954, I believe it was, when Lyndon B. Johnson slipped this into a tax bill to silence nonprofits and keep them out of the process. Of course, it's grown over the years in terms of its impact and effect to where now, the not even beyond the government, the left uses it to intimidate churches into silence. And I would argue that this is a part of the, I think, the moral decline that has taken place in our country, is that there is not a more robust discussion about these issues. And I'm not talking about just candidates. It's been taken beyond candidates to talk about issues that have been deemed political. And I think if we're going to restore the country, this is a part of it.
You know, I agree with you 100%. And I would just also say, I think this is part of what you see from the professional political class in our country, unfortunately. There's real condescension here towards people of faith. And they think that, you know, the people of faith are backwards, they're foolish, they're ignorant, they're uninformed, and they don't care to hear what we have to say, and they're fine with silencing the speech of pastors and religious believers. But you know what? The Constitution isn't fine with it, and that's where we take our stand, and that's why religious liberty needs a defense.
In the wake of this tickles me, because I see this quite frequently. I mean, I get this even on this program, the Right Wing Watch. I mean, they shadow me and they take clips of what I say, and they put it on their website. And in fact, I actually use the clips because it makes it easier for me to find it. And they think that I'm ashamed of what I said, or I don't want people to hear it. I'm grateful that they're helping broadcast what I'm saying. And so I all those folks that are hearing this via Right Wing Watch, I welcome you to hear it firsthand here all the time. But it's the same thing here. This is a message that you've been delivering across Missouri for years, and the media thinks they caught you saying something that you don't want people to know.
It just shows you how out of touch they are, Tony, with the voters of this state, with the citizens, the people of Missouri, and I think with the great heartland of our country. And I'm not just talking about the geographic heartland. I'm talking about the true center of our country. I mean, Americans, by the way, whatever faith background, most Americans don't think that pastors and churches ought to be silenced, that houses of worship ought to be told to stay quiet. They don't think that. They say, no, let them preach what they believe. Let them live out what they believe. They know, most people know, right. that there's been no greater force for good in our country's history than in the preaching and activism and speech of Christians and religious believers in this country. And the media, they just don't get it. I mean, they're totally out of touch, and they don't understand where the heart of this country really is.
Yeah, General Hawley, what I have found to be the case is that those that are most concerned about this in terms of they're afraid of what churches may be saying, or what pastors may be saying, I should say, are ones who actually rarely, if ever, go to church. They really don't know that how this actually operates. And I've said this to pastors before. Pastors underestimate their influence, and those on the outside overestimate their influence. Most pastors do not speak on a regular basis about these issues. In fact, we've seen poll after poll that say the congregants wish their pastors would speak to these issues more often. But if we're going to address the great issues of our day, that, again, have been deemed political. For instance, the issue of abortion or the redefinition of marriage, those were moral and spiritual issues long before they were political issues, but they've been changed or taken over by the political class, and pastors are told not to touch those. You can't be faithful to the gospel and preach the full, complete word of God and ignore those issues.
And, you know, no pastor and no church should be asked to abandon their most deeply held beliefs, should be asked to abandon biblical truth in order to stay open and in order to be able to preach. And our founders made this choice, Tony, and we as a people have made this choice. We have said that we want to protect the right of pastors and churches to preach and to live their faith. That's what makes our country what it is. I mean, that's what makes our country the pluralistic place that it is. I mean, with true diversity of opinion across different traditions and faith, that's great. That's wonderful. But you know what makes that possible? The protection for pastors and churches to preach and follow those beliefs. And it's under threat today. And if you don't think it's under threat, just look at the reaction to those of us who are standing up and saying, no, the IRS should not be discriminating against churches.
Exactly. That is so well said. Attorney General Josh Hawley, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for not backing down in your defense of the Constitution and the freedom of all Americans, including pastors, to speak freely.
Thank you so much, Tony.
You can find out more about the Johnson Amendment as well as Attorney General Hawley when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider donating to the work of Family Research Council by simply clicking on the Donate button. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Social media companies like Facebook and Twitter have been under a lot of scrutiny in the past few months for, among other things, their algorithms and why liberal comments, no matter how outrageous, are accepted, while at the same time conservative thought is worthy of suspension from their platforms. Joining Tony to discuss a particularly vicious attack from the left is political commentator, NRA spokesperson, and Values Voters Summit participant, Dana Lash.
Dana, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Tony. Good to be with you.
Hey, I look forward to seeing you at the Values Voter Summit here in a few weeks. You're always great, and so looking forward to that. Let me just say this. I mean, as a parent of five children, and I know your husband, and I know you guys, you're just a great family. When people start talking about your children, I mean, that takes it to a whole new level. I mean, this is pretty outrageous. Did Twitter respond in the appropriate way?
I don't think that they responded in a way that was consistent with their terms of service, nor do I think it's consistent with what Jack Dorsey has said previously when he's discussed the issue of consistent application of terms of service on Twitter. It's sad that it even has to get this far. It's sad that it happened in the first place.
Right.
And the idea that anybody has to pay this kind of Christ or have this kind of discussion just because they're advocating for a particular issue or sharing a political thought is insane. They initially, it's crazy because when you compare what they did initially to this individual, it is, and how they've treated other conservatives in the past and how they've, for instance, Kathleen McKinley, who had her account temporarily suspended simply because she did nothing more than share a very well-written, very rational and thought-out, really thoughtful column as to her view on transgenderism, et cetera. And apparently that triggered some individuals, and she had her account temporarily suspended.
Yeah, there was no attack. By the way, I read her post. There was no attack whatsoever. And just saying that transgenderism in the military, in particular, she was focused on, makes no sense, and the cost associated with it, and her account was locked for violating standards. But threatening to kill or saying that someone's children should be killed, that doesn't violate their policy?
Yeah, exactly. Apparently that didn't violate their terms of service. And so many people reported this particular account, and Twitter apparently ignored it when we reported it. They finally responded and said that it didn't violate anything. Then, of course, there was public pressure, which began, which it shouldn't take public pressure.
Right.
The only reason that there was public pressure is, because I have a platform, I'm on radio, I do television commentary, and other people noticed it, and it went from there. If I was just some regular, average, everyday mom, which I still am, but if I didn't do radio and I didn't do television, I doubt that there would have been any kind of public pressure at all, which is a real shame that you have to have. You have to be on air nationally. Now, here's the thing that I wanted to point out. Previously, Jack Dorsey has always talked about Twitter algorithms, and he has said that it is, it's about activity, and it's not real people back in the offices of Twitter that are pressing buttons. Which apparently someone had to do that because Twitter then announced that they had re-reviewed when they sent that email to us. They had re-reviewed this account back in 2016. Because this isn't the first time that I've dealt with this, and I don't even share the most serious ones online. Back in 2016, someone put my phone number and home address and photos of my house on all over Twitter. And this individual called my home, called my private number one evening around 11 o'clock at night, and was so threatening both on Twitter and on the phone that we had to have the police come out to the house immediately. And we were working with law enforcement on this issue. And I haven't spoken about it publicly, yet until now, but they began an investigation, and they submitted grand jury subpoenas to Twitter, but Twitter refused to acknowledge the subpoena, and they wouldn't release any information despite the grand jury issuing the order. Now, at this exact same time, someone on the very far left, a gentleman named Kurt Eichenwald, who lived in the same Dallas area that I do, had received a threat on Twitter, and Twitter immediately cooperated with him and law enforcement and released all records of the offending account. This goes way beyond algorithm. This is about active bias. And I've been consistent in that I've never called for the government to regulate any of these platforms. They are begging for that to happen themselves because they are not, which all I've ever asked for and others, they are not actively and consistently enforcing their terms of service for all users.
Yeah, I mean, I am against anyone advocating for violence, right or left. I mean, that has no place in a republic. You cannot maintain civil society if you're threatening violence because you disagree with people. So that should be the line, but that's not the line. It's an ideological line that is very subjective, and we see it time and time again, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Google. And I think the president is absolutely right. When the president says there is bias, there is bias. And I think your case is a prime example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Bias, and, it comes down to the question of who actually owns the digital public square. And it's about corporate censorship. It's suppression of speech simply based on ideology. And to allow, to sanction this stuff by silence, and I think that that's what it is, when you allow this behavior to occur and when it's not treated equally, in many ways, I personally feel that it encourages that behavior because these individuals don't feel that there's any deterrent. Anonymity has given great courage to individuals who have more zeal than knowledge and more zeal than compassion. And this is a result.
And in many ways, Twitter and Facebook provide a shield of protection for the left who are advocating violence against conservatives.
Yes, absolutely.
Dana, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to seeing you at the Values Voter Summit coming up.
Looking forward to it, Tony. Thank you.
To find out more about Dana Lash or the Values Voter Summit, just head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
First, Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. Now, Christian adoption providers are being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. This is why laws are needed to protect faith-based adoption agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. You know, when I was growing up, science was science. Only facts mattered. But today it seems that more and more often, so-called science is just political agendas in disguise. A recent peer review study at Brown University has been removed from the school's website because it may offend a certain group of people. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to discuss it is FRC's own Peter Sprigg.
This is a trend we're seeing where these academic studies, while done, a peer-reviewed journal, just because people don't like the outcome, they're attacked.
Yes, it's very disturbing. It's disturbing in terms of the academic community and the idea of academic freedom and a free exchange of ideas. But the reason in this case is because this journal article actually presented some disturbing information about what's going on among young people who are requesting gender transition services.
Okay, so what did the study find?
Well, this study examined a phenomenon that has been called or referred to as rapid onset gender dysphoria. And this is something that has emerged or just been identified within the last few years. That's very different from the way that most transgender youth experience gender dysphoria. With most transgender youth, there is evidence of gender nonconforming behavior or gender dysphoria in childhood. It's evident early in childhood. There are symptoms early in childhood, and it gradually develops. This involves young people, mostly girls, who after puberty, who are already older teens or young adults, who very suddenly present themselves as saying that they want to transition their gender without having had a history of previous symptoms. And the theory, the concern that a lot of parents have, and this is based on a survey of parents of these adults, adolescents and young adults, as they call them, AYAs, the concern is that they are being influenced, as you said, by the internet and social media and peers, rather than having a genuine gender dysphoria that dates back to childhood.
And so the opposition here coming from the transgender community, suggesting that this study that shows that these young people are being influenced by social media and friends, that somehow that takes away from the argument that this is natural and inborn?
Well, yes, yes. And it's interesting that the transgender movement has become so radical that essentially their position is that anyone who presents themselves to a medical professional and says, I'm transgender, I want to change my sex, or I want gender reassignment surgery, that should just be accepted at face value with no questions asked, and they should be provided what they ask for. And basically what this article is saying is that a number of these people have what are called comorbidities. They have other severe psychological problems. They have a history of trauma, including, in some cases, gender and sexual trauma, and that these things perhaps need to be explored by clinicians, by doctors and therapists, before simply leaping in to doing gender reassignment surgery. And yet, the transgender activists object to that. They object to the idea that questions, any questions, should be asked of someone who says that they're transgender.
Well, in defending the university's actions of taking down the study, university dean wrote that the findings might invalidate the perspectives of members of the transgender community. The dean insisted, however, and I'm quoting from a Fox News story, that it was still committed to academic freedom, noting that all studies should be debated vigorously. How can you have academic freedom and debate these studies vigorously when you basically burn the research like people used to burn books? They don't want the stuff out there.
Yeah, well, it sounds like Brown University is a little bit ashamed of the fact that this study has been associated with their name. Now, of course, the university is not responsible for it. The professor and the journal are responsible for the content of the research. But if they're proud of other research, other significant research that their other professors are doing in other fields, I don't see why they should discriminate against this professor.
All right, Peter Sprigg, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. To find out more about this year's Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C., head over to TonyPerkins.com, and I recommend signing up soon as space is running out. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.